The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of Track Wrestling, along with a man who has endless amounts of hand sanitizer. It's Andy Hamilton, also of Track Wrestling. I don't know how you do it. You have this little tube you bring, and it seems like it's bone dry, but you're always able to squeeze out one more drop.
We needed every last drop we could find over there, too. People were dropping like flies, yourself included.
Yeah, well, the best name of the week certainly was Barfing Gary. I mean, it was just absolutely had me in stitches. Gary Abbott, communications director for USA Wrestling, puked three times. What? Andy's laughing so hard he can barely keep this going. He puked three times. One was on press row. And I tell you, we interacted and he had some, I was coming in the door on press row and he was coming out and he had a whole bunch of hand towels, and he said, I just puked. And you know what? It got me 2 days later, and fortunately, I puked in the arena bathroom and then twice at the hotel and then came back. But man, that was a bug that caught a lot of Americans during that trip. Gary included, me included, a lot of the women's team, I heard. And so I was one of the unfortunate ones. The rest of the track team got away with it. You had a little cough. You're still laughing for the Barfing Gary. You just can't even pull it together. That's what's beautiful about these podcasts is we can laugh and have fun. But I'll tell you, it was that was one of the great moments. I mean, Gary Abbott just went through the All Guts Hall of Fame with that. Like, how many people can puke on press row, have it cleaned up, and then just keep going? He worked the whole day.
He worked the entire day.
And like you said, you don't know if it's gutsy or you're upset at him or happy for him that he has that much guts to do it. I am glad that I didn't stick around because I didn't want other people to get it. But I'm blaming Gary. He gave it to me. I have no doubt about it. So thanks, Gary Abbott, for giving me your stomach flu because a few people got it. But certainly one of the more memorable moments that were not on the mat.
Yeah, you tied Gary three times a piece, but he wins on criteria.
Yeah, because he puked on press row. So.
And he stuck it out.
He stuck it out. And I'm honored to say I did not. I'm really glad I went back and got a little sleep, came back. And I think I'm better for that. But Gary's a champ, man. He's older than me. And he's a
war horse, man.
He's a fighter, man. But what an era. Let's talk. The complete era. Let's talk about men's freestyle in particular. Let's start with that and move forward. So for the last 3 years, we're talking our world championship cycle. We've seen some interesting things. You've seen all of it, Andy, so you have a unique perspective. But 2017, the greatest team moment in the United States history. I don't think it'll be topped. It's always going to be number one as long as I'm living. I don't know how you would ever top Kyle Snyder coming through in the clutch, winning over Sagulayev. The United States wins the first men's freestyle team world championship since 1995. Historic moment, team championship. The next year, last year at the 2018 World Championships, they get second. This year, they get third. Really a remarkable run. And to put it historically, you have that 93 and 95 era. They won it twice, and then they plummeted to ninth in 1994. Some different circumstances because the Soviet Union disbanded. So it was Russia, a little bit different era. That 2017 team was unique and that they pulled it off. But let's just put it in a contextual window. I think, again, we're seeing why this is might be the greatest era in American wrestling history. I think you can make a strong case that we've seen the greatest 3 years in men's freestyle history at the world level. Your thoughts on that?
Hey, you're the historical mind here.
Well,
if you say so, I'm with you.
I think it's close. I think there's some teams back in the era. And of course, you're battling Soviet Union teams, and there are some great teams with John Smith, and there was a lot of seconds in there with Gable. But
93, 94, 95.
Yeah. Right? I mean, so, you got, yeah, first, ninth, and first.
Yep.
And then you follow that up with a great gold medal team in 96 with Tom Brands, Kendall Cross, Kurt Angle. Bruce Baumgartner gets bronze. Townsend Saunders gets silver. And you just had a really solid team there. Then it really did dip off after that. You didn't have any team that had multiple gold medalists, I think, off the top of my head, until 2015. It didn't happen until 2015 that you had multiple world champions in the same year until 2015, until Snyder and Burroughs did it. And from 97 till 2006, you had Les Gutchess, you had Sammy Henson, you had Stephen Neal in 99. And then I think it took till 2006 for Bill Zadek to get another one. So you don't want to say it was a dry spell, but I tell you what, there were some lean years there, but appreciate what we have now. It's been a great run. And for you to see it all, you have a unique perspective that you went to all three of those world championships. Compare and contrast, what was different? What was unique from year to year for this Olympic cycle?
Well, I think back to 2017, and you look, and tremendous tournament for the United States. And even then, 1 point difference over Russia, and the first time in what, like close to 60 years, I think, that Russia did not win a gold medal in any style. And you knew that they'd come back guns blazing in 2018. And they did. They had a great tournament over in Budapest, and what, didn't lose a match. I think it's the last 2 days of the tournament, I don't think they lost a match.
Something ridiculous. I mean, they just really put on a spectacular display, as they did this year.
Yeah. Yep. So the differences, you look at that 2017 team, and then you add Kyle Dake and David Taylor. And of course, Kyle Dake and Jaden Cox going into the non-Olympic weight classes that were added and winning titles. And so you would think that the U.S., the chances would be even stronger that they would win, they would repeat in 2018. And yet Russia kind of ran away with it. So it kind of speaks volumes to, their turnaround. And then this year, of course, deck stacked against the United States. From the time that David Taylor announced that he was not going to be wrestling this year, it's a huge loss there. You go from him scoring 25 points a year ago to, what was it, Pat Downey scored, I think, 3 or 4 or something like that this year. Not that 21 points or whatever it was, 21, 22 points would have made a difference. It would have pushed the United States up to second past Kazakhstan. But tournament felt to me like the team race was over in the first hour, when Yegoyev comes back from behind and wins against his Amir Aslanov in the opening round, and Rashidov comes back, beats Haji Aliyev. Zane Rutherford drops the 1 point match to Valdez, and Dayton Fix drops the match on, there at the very end against Takahashi. Those four matches right there, it felt like any chance the United States was going to have to compete for a team title, it was kind of out the window within, the first hour, hour and a half, 2 hours of the tournament. So, that being said, it was one where the U.S. just really didn't have those matches that they needed to have go their way. They didn't go their way for the most part. I mean, we came into it thinking probably Kyle Dake and Jaden Cox, it's going to be really hard to beat them. And they took care of business. They won golds, but Fix lost that close one. And, Graf lost a tough one in the semis to, or was it the quarters? I think the quarters to Lumtadze. And Zane lost a tough one there where he had the lead. And then it was a, I think what, 2-2 situation or 2-1 situation against Valdez. James Green had a lead that got away from him in the last minute and a half. Burroughs had the lead against Sitikov, and that got away in the last 2 seconds. Dake, of course, won. Downey went 2-1. Jaden won the title. Snyder got tripped up by Sharifov in the semi, so we didn't get the chance to see Snyder and Sagulayev part three. And then Gwizdowski, Nick, never really got going. He had kept shooting singles underneath a guy that's a giant and kind of emptied his tank right there. And so they certainly could have wrestled a lot better and things could have gone a lot different. I don't know that it would have made any difference in terms of being in the race to win a title. I don't think so. When Russia scored, what, 192 points or something like that, and the U.S. was 98 back. But I'm eager to see what 2020 looks like.
It's everything right now. It's your attention immediately turns to this part of the equation, and we got to make sure we sneak in here, stick around for Jaden Cox. He's going to be our guest again. We had him on the show after the 2018 World Championships when he won his first one, and we get him for his second. So excited to talk with Jaden, this year's world champion at 92 kilograms. But I think that now that it's over and you've got a chance to digest it, and even before that, it's been a strange year with the whole Dake Deringer situation, and you had the Yanni and Zane situation. It's just really been a year like no other, where you just had some things play out a little bit different and it drug on and didn't know who was going to be on the world team in two spots, and it got settled late. But all that being said, I think a third place performance is really solid from the United States. And those points came in late. You looked at the team rankings going into that final day, and the United States was not going to get third because they don't tabulate it at the time. They don't do it like the NCAA tournament where they give you the automatic points. But I think a third place finish is solid. As we break down the tournament even further, I think one of the turning point matches was Jordan Burroughs getting that first round win. I know the way I felt was you're just on pins and needles wondering, is this it? Is he going to lose in the first round and he's going to ride off into the sunset and this might be over? But he fought through it. He fought through some tough matches, and then he gets to Sitikov, and you think, hey, he's going to pull this out because he has the lead. And it was just a kind of a deja vu of last year. And it makes you sick even talking about it, because like he talked about, you're seconds away from a 7-time world champion. Possibly he still has to do a lot of things to be able to get that, but you're in a position to be a 7-time world and Olympic champion and have the all-time record. And now he has to settle for 2 bronzes. It's that close. History's yeah. that close. It's just like that any given Sunday, you know, you can win or lose and those sayings, but man, it's unbelievable how fragile that balance of records are. And I think Jordan Burroughs is very aware of that. And just from the press conference afterward to him talking, it just seems like he's as motivated as ever. I think he said, I have no plans on getting out of this anytime soon. I don't know what that means, but I think Jordan Burroughs is highly motivated to keep going strong. And you really saw his resolve and why he truly is one of the all-time greats, and why, and we have to make sure people understand this, he absolutely got mobbed at the world championships. Yeah. Like he would not get left alone. After he got his bronze medal, it was like paparazzi. He had to be stuffed into a car and they had to get him out of there. It was just kind of a mob scene. Like everyone wanted a selfie with him. Everyone wanted a picture. So Jordan Burroughs internationally is a huge, huge star. And that should not get lost on how special it is and what he's been able to do in this sport. And it was is pretty remarkable to see him come back the way he did. And man, that bronze medal match for Burroughs, and he lit it up, man, hit those classic mm-hmm. doubles and really put a statement on it. So I'm glad he got the bronze. What, 7-time world medalist now at every world
champion.
Eight with the Olympics. And what a great run.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, no matter how this ends, if he goes on and wins an Olympic gold next year in Tokyo and he hangs it up then with 6 and 2 Olympic golds, those 3 seconds of wrestling, the 1.5 over in Budapest, or actually it's 8 seconds that Sitikov got to him, final seconds over in Budapest in the quarterfinals last year, and then that 20-second stretch or 15 seconds where Sitikov got to him again that led to the step-out point. Those are going to be the moments that are probably going to be most prominent in his mind the rest of his life. as opposed to, you know, the 100 plus matches that he's won, all the medals that he's won, all the highlight moments.
Winning on a broken
ankle. But that's the way he's wired.
Yeah. But to have the resolve, though, that he did, because I think you thought the same way I did on that first match. Like, hey, what's going on? That match was bonkers. It's just worth it to go back and watch that again, because it was absolute insanity. And everyone was watching that, just wondering what's going to happen here. And just even bizarre moments where he actually walked over to the chair judge and said something, because he kept getting poked in the eye. It was a weird scene. You just wonder what's going on here. And finally he gets the match and pulls it out, wins 11-10, and then gets on that roll and then gets into the semifinals. But just Jordan Burroughs is the man. I mean, that guy is so mentally solid, and the prospect of a Dake and Burroughs, just that alone is why you need to be at the Olympic trials. I just
2020 think is going to be bonkers.
It's just, yeah. You
74, think of the matchups. Then 86 if Jaden comes down, or 97 if Jaden goes up. 86, you know, regardless of what Jaden does, 86 is going to be a barn burner with Taylor. And, you know, like we said, maybe Jaden goes up, maybe Jaden goes down. Daring are coming up. Zahid Valencia. What does Mark Hall do? You know, some of the others that are going to be in there. Pat Downey going to be in that weight class. It's going to every weight at the Olympic trials next year. I can't fathom like the quarterfinals on are.
Yeah, you shake your head. And then I think 74, probably the one that, I mean, Dake's going down. There's no question about it. 74 kilos. Burroughs is going to be there. You got Olympic red shirts.
Isaiah Martinez, Makai Lewis.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, reel them off there.
Vincenzo Joseph, potentially. What does Mark Hall do? Does he go down?
James Green's bumping up.
James Green coming up.
So you just have so many matchups that you just never thought you were going to see. And now you're going to get them. And I think you said it best. Like, hey,
Jason Nolf.
You don't like it. You want there to be 10, but you kind of do like it, because you get to see these matchups that you might not otherwise see. So although six is too few, it does make for some really compelling matchup. Let's talk a little bit about who's qualified, who isn't. There are six weight classes, of course, for the Olympics. Only two in men's freestyle are qualified right now. Kyle Snyder did his job. Jordan Burroughs did his job, so they have a pass to the finals of the Olympic trials. Other than that, you have a few guys in the semis. You have Kyle Dake earning a spot in the semis of whatever weight he chooses, and then Jaden Cox has the same thing. So we have a unique scenario right now going into the Olympic trials as well. And then let's talk about the women's side as well. Some history there. First time, 3 gold medals. Cara Winchester, Tamira Mensah-Stock, and Adeline Gray, all world champions. I think the unfortunate part is the other 7 did not medal. But I'll tell you what, you look at Sarah Hildebrandt, she had just a monster draw. She had to run the gauntlet. It didn't work out for her, but you have a returning silver medalist at that weight class. Forrest Molinari was close to making it to the finals. Allie Reagan, just a tough situation there where she hit a low single right off the bat, and then just kind of got worked there with someone who likes to throw and got pinned and knocked out of the tournament. So just some interesting things on the women's side. Victoria Francis in a bronze medal match and goes 1-2. Just a little bit of an odd tournament for the women, because you have the highlight moment, you have some history there with 3 gold medals, but you thought based on that team that there was going to be a few more medals sprinkled in there, Andrew.
No doubt. You look at it with Japan only having one champion.
Huh.
Like, if ever there was a year to pop up and take Japan down and win a team title, this was it, right? I mean, 3 gold medalists. Japan only has 1. U.S. goes 3-1, heads up against the Japanese. And still they finished, what, 32 points back, I think, in the team race?
Yeah.
That's one where you sit there and think, man, if A, B, C, D, and E would have happened and could have happened, that they're right there and they're maybe winning a team title.
Well, and with the women, you just think what might have been for the U.S. side. And hey, props to Adeline Gray, all-time record, five-time world champion. She's going to go for her first Olympic gold medal next year. But Adeline Gray is really the new standard bearer for being proficient and winning gold medals. And she's just done a fantastic job. And hey, you also have to throw in Helen Merulis in the mix. You had a great article about Helen and her journey and where she's at and all of this. And you got to think if it's 2017 Helen, she's going to be winning a gold medal. And that enhances the women's world championship team. She's been a little bit lost in all this because I don't know that she gets mentioned as much as she should be because of last year and getting bonked in the head and the concussions and then her shoulder. She's just hasn't been on the scene this year. But if you have a healthy Helen and she's doing what she's doing and she made the progression she did going into 2017, you're probably having four world champions and that might make a big difference in what happens with the rest of the team. So a lot of variables there and just a lot of angles for the women's team that really are compelling going into the 2020 cycle because, again, you have two weight classes that have been qualified. The women have their work cut out for them, too. What is it right now? The United States, of the 18 weight classes, we have four qualified?
Yeah.
Is that right? So there's just quite a bit of work to do.
68 and 76 in women's freestyle, 74 and 97 men's freestyle.
So the way they will do that first is the Pan Am qualifier. So, yep. And I think for us, we were looking at it like, all right, let's see if maybe a tough Cuban can get knocked out of the tournament or win a medal. I think in, what was the Greco-Roman case at 67 kilos?
Barrero, he won the title.
And you're just glad
that Oscar Pino Hines.
Yeah, just get them out of the...
They're out of the brackets.
Out of the brackets or the Pan Ams, because if you medal and you've already qualified it, you do not get to go for
your country. You wrestle for a medal.
Yeah.
You qualify your country.
Yep. So just a lot of compelling elements on the women's side. Any other thoughts that you can think of from the women's side that come to mind? I mean, Tamira Mensah-Stock just absolutely died. Just unbelievable.
Yeah, she was incredible. And incredible on the mat, and then certainly a superstar off the mat, too. You had a chance to get her on camera a couple times.
She's wild, man. She's
stole
awesome.
The show.
Yeah. She's just, it's her show and I love it. She's just so, it's not like she's trying to do it. She just has this personality that comes out. She's just wonderful. Just a great person that has an infectious personality. Just a lot of fun to be around.
Maybe she should co-host this show with you. You guys are awesome together.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, here live with Track Wrestling is Tamira Mariama Mensah-Stock and Kyle!
All right, so we'll transition over to Greco-Roman. No weight class is qualified for the United States. I think on the surface, if you look at it, last year we had a medalist in Adam Kuhn, but outside of that, there weren't a lot of individual wins from a lot of other people. Ellis Coleman won a match. Kamal Bey, I believe, won two matches last year. So I think overall there were seven wins from the United States, but just spread across the board here, you just had, I think, seven wrestlers win matches on the Greco-Roman side. And even though there weren't any medals, from our vantage point, I think it felt like progress.
Yeah, there was a lot going on last year in Budapest, right? I mean, you had matches getting away from the Americans at the end. You had Jesse Thilke questioning their training and what they were doing there. You had guys that were off at the mall instead of watching Adam Kuhn try to win a gold medal. It just seemed like things were kind of getting ripped apart at the seams a little bit. And I think just from our vantage point, like it just felt like an operation that was a lot more of a professional outfit this year. I mean, they had guys that were competing hard. They were in so many matches, which wasn't the case a year ago. yeah, they didn't win any medals, but I think instead of three guys winning matches a year ago, they had seven guys win matches. They weren't getting turned like tops like they were a little bit a year ago. So yeah, there's progress there. I think you can definitely point to progress. You could probably also question whether there was enough progress. And I get that argument too. I mean, you know, they don't have anybody qualified at this point. They didn't have anybody in a medal match.
And some matches got away from them. They were completely winnable too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But I do feel like there are some things that are pointing that, you know, the arrow's pointing upward in some areas. I mean, look, I go back to some of the trips that I've been on in the past overseas, and you know, you just wonder what in the world's going on with USA Greco. I mean, they went to U23s last year, didn't win a single match. And that in the wake of what happened in Budapest, and you're like, where is this thing heading? And then this year to come back and have three medalists for the first time in I think 35 years at the junior level, and to see some progress in some areas on the senior level, I think that it's encouraging that things are heading back in the right direction. And but that being said, like, they need to take care of business Pan Am qualifier. They need to get a lot of these weight classes qualified, and they need to go and do some damage in Tokyo next year. They need to have some guys that are wrestling for medals.
Yeah, it's so there's a lot on the line there. And we had a chance to talk with Matt Lindland for probably, what would you say, 30 minutes after the entire tournament was over. And I thought it was really good to be able to get his perspective. And just a couple things stood out was, hey, you're not getting that elite college level guy at any time to really just commit and say, I'm going to give this a chance. And a lot of times you see a guy dabble in it like, I'm going to try it. And then they maybe don't win it or get the result they want. And then they cut ties and they don't do it. It takes a lot of work to make the transition because it is a different sport, completely different setups. And Lindland just wants them to stay in the system for a cycle and just get into the Greco-Roman system. And could you imagine, and I think he even brought this up, what if a Bo Nickel went all in on Greco? What that would do for the program?
Yeah.
It would be, but he doesn't get that guy. And we talked about this where you got two guys and John Stefanowicz and Ray Bunker who said, I didn't even know what Greco-Roman wrestling was until I got in the military. And so you get people harp and say, hey, we don't have freestyle. That should be our style that we have year round when we start into high school and we're behind. You have two guys on the world team that haven't even heard of Greco-Roman wrestling. I mean, that's a tribute to them that they've made that much progress to get on a world team and be able to have that much grit and determination to do that. But they're behind on this. I mean, saying that publicly, like I hadn't even heard of it. So that's exponential growth, but you're just not getting a lot of college guys either to come out and commit to the program and give this a shot. And you go back to that 07 team that won the world championship. Who were they led by? High level college All-Americans. Lindsey Durlacher, second in the nation. Brad Vering, first in the nation. Harry Lester, top recruit in the nation. All guys that were high level people that led the charge. And I think you're going to need more of that in the mix because college level guys have a different perspective than just going all time Greco. So that's just was my take, and just a few of the takeaways from Matt Lindland was he would love to have one of those guys like, hey, even Kyle Dake when he was behind Burroughs, what if you got him over in the system for a while and just let him give it a try? Could he have won it? I don't know, but I think we've seen what Kyle Dake can do and he's pretty darn good. And I think he adapts really well. Could have made the transition and made a difference. And we would have been watching in a different way if Kyle Dake wasn't a world team. I mean, it would have absolutely lifted the level. So just a lot of things that play on the Greco side. I don't know if you have anything to add on that.
Well, but eager to see what Chandler Rogers can do.
Yeah, there you go. I think he adds a spark and a dynamic that really would make it unique. And I think he's a perfect example of what you want into the Greco program. So I hope he does it.
I'm eager to see if we get some crossover here for 2020. think about the 60 kilo guys or 61 kilo guys in men's freestyle who are maybe kind of stuck in between where, you know, that it might be outside their reach to get down to 57 on a one day, on a same day weigh in. And maybe they're too small for 65. Do they come over and try to make the Greco Olympic team at 60?
I think you threw out Tyler Graff as a possibility. I mean, how about Joe Colon? You've seen him with double overs and what he does. He's got good throws. It's different when you're doing it all Greco, but I mean, it is compelling to think about a Joe Colon, Tyler Graff going into a situation like that where they really are tweeners, man. I mean, cutting down to 57 doesn't seem ideal. Going up to 65, no way. So what do you do? We've already had a couple guys saying that 2019 was going to be their final year because they're right in between. And Cody Brewer is one of them. Said, I'm just done. Mm-hmm. Just can't make that cut and he can't go up. So I think the 61 kilo guys are going to be hurt the most by this. I really do.
79 too. I mean, there's going to be some guys there that are just kind of stuck.
Yeah.
That's a big, big difference between 74 kilos and 86.
Yeah, it really is.
What are we talking, 29 pounds there?
Yeah, that's a big jump. So
I mean, what's a guy like Mark Hall do?
I don't know. He's the example. I mean, I guess, I think go down. That sounds right, but I don't know that he wants to go down. I don't think he wants to cut to that.
He indicated after Junior Worlds in 2017 that might be the last time you ever see him at 74 kilos. And he has put on some size since then. And he looks a lot more like a full grown 174 pounder now than he did that first year.
Yeah. Well, maybe he bumps up. Maybe he does that. What does Bo Nickel do? Like we haven't talked about where he fits into this. And I think he's a legit contender wherever he goes.
Sure.
I think he can go into there. So again, we keep thinking of names that make this Olympic trials as compelling as ever. So as we close out, just talking about the world championships and what transpired and any other thoughts from you on the Greco-Roman program, but it was a unique year. It really was. Had some high spots, but I think it just went different than what I anticipated, especially on the women's side. I just think I thought there was going to be a couple more medals sprinkled in there, given the level of talent from the team, but they set an all-time record, 3 gold medals, and gold shines brightest in this situation. And you have to commend them for a really quality performance.
Yep.
So yeah,
no doubt. How about your thoughts on Nur Sultan, Kyle?
It truly was the strangest place I've ever been to. Just no doubt. Like 3 malls within what, maybe a mile of each other?
Oh, there are malls everywhere. Malls, yeah. And athletic venues.
Yeah.
Everywhere you turn.
Athletic venues and then empty spaces, parks with nobody in them, walking the streets and no one's there. Then you go on the mall and it's jam packed. It just was.
Construction sites all over the place that are half complete.
Yeah. And it didn't have a real homey feel to it, but the people were awesome. Warm and friendly and the nicest people you could meet. We came into it and we had a bad experience with a taxi driver. So you start getting into your head and we're in a former Soviet Union and what's this like? And we're in trouble. And then it just went complete 180 on that. And they were just the nicest people, went above and beyond. And
I don't have a couple UWW volunteers. Young men, probably, what would you say, late teens, early 20s?
Right in there.
Probably that kind of turned the whole trip around from the beginning for us.
Sure
did. After the taxi fiasco at the beginning, and these guys stepped up and got us a cab, got us a shuttle ride to our hotel, and checked in on us, and rode along with us. They couldn't have been more hospitable. And that was kind of the experience that we felt was more the norm throughout the trip.
It was just everything was just about service, and it was never too much. It was never too little. It was just that right amount. We'd go to breakfast every day. They knew our room number. after just a couple times and just always there to greet us. So, man, Kazakhstan is a fantastic place. Highly recommend going there. Just be ready for a really strange experience, yeah, just as far as the city's concerned. Yeah. It's a really bizarre town.
But of all the places that we've been overseas for wrestling, and we've been to a lot where Americans don't feel as welcomed. I mean, remember our experience in Budapest, like at the mall trying to get dinner, and it was like we were completely invisible. We may be still sitting there trying to get served if we hadn't got up and left, but that was like, it couldn't be more different with how the people treated us in Kazakhstan.
Yeah. And don't take Borat as an example, because it's, it's not even close. And people kind of think of that with Kazakhstan, cause that's supposedly where he's from and all fictitiousness, but, man, what a great country and just a great venue. And they put on a really great show and the crowds were awesome. The crowds really were fantastic, yeah, and the energy was good. And you just were happy to see so many people in the stands for a world championship event, as it should be. So you look around and people are watching, and it's 9 days, man. And I think that's the one thing you say is 9 days of world championship wrestling. How do you shorten it? I don't know the solution. I think the only thing we said was do the two bronze medal matches at the same time, because they go bronze, and then championship match. Just put those together.
Somebody's on four mats instead of two.
Yeah. Just do a couple things to get people out of there, get them spending money in the town and enjoying it a little bit. So just a couple things, but not much to critique other than that. And it just was a quality venue. We walked to the venue almost every day. It was close to a 2 mile walk down and back. So just a unique experience, really the opposite of what happened last year, where we were right across from the venue. So just really happy and fortunate we got a chance to experience it again.
Yeah, it was great.
What do you say we get to 2-time world champion Jaden Cox, Andrew?
Sounds good.
Our guest is a 2-time world champion. And this is cool because last year after the world championships, our guest was Jaden Cox. Well, we're doing it again. He won another world championship. And let's just go through his history. Third at the Olympics in 2016, third at the world championships in 2017, won it last year, won it this year, 3-time NCAA champion, really making a case for one of the all-time greats in the sport of wrestling. And he's just beginning. Jaden Cox, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's great to be here with you guys, and thanks for having me. It's good to be back again, because that usually means things went well, so I'm excited to be back.
It went exceedingly well, and you just have to take us through this. I've replayed it in my head. I've replayed it online. Tell us how you got out of that takedown in the semifinals. I've never seen anything like it. You were in a leg lace, and it looked like giving up a takedown was inevitable. Take us through that sequence and how you got out of getting taken down.
Well, I mean, it's not really something that I can say oh, I've worked on it time and time again. But you know, it's a position that you get into, especially in practice and stuff. And I take a lot of pride in not giving up points and not getting taken down. And I didn't want to give it up. And I felt good. The lace was tight, but I didn't feel a risk of going. But also I also knew that I couldn't I didn't want to give a point, but also I knew that if I kind of went down, that it might get a little bit tighter. So, ended up seemed like the best option. But definitely I just wanted to, I don't even know from my own mindset how it happened, but I just knew that I was going to fight, and fight to not give it up. And, you know, it turns out that, that it worked out. And as soon as he let go of the lace, I knew the next option is, well, now he's going to have to jump body. So, it goes back to, doing a stand up, basically bringing your elbows to your sides and know that he's going to try and lock his hands and get the hand control and peel out,
Yeah. That's some folk style stuff there. What, Jane, yeah, what did it mean to you to shut out the field?
It's a testament to my training and lets me know that I'm doing the right thing. And that's not to say that there's plenty of things for me to add, obviously, and to get better at. But, it makes it, it's a really cool feeling. And I hope that people realize and understand that, that's something that's not easy to do, but, it means a lot, and I'm proud to do it, and I'm excited for it. It makes me excited. It makes me excited for the future, do more, because, you know, it's a lot, and it's a lot easier to win matches when people can't score points, you know? And I think that it'll allow me to have a little, even more faith in my, in my ability as a whole, as a complete wrestler, kind of like, to be a little more free and open, you know, to trust, I can trust my ability to not get scored on, and I can, why not go out there and take points? And I think that's something that I'm on the cusp of, even now. And, that's what I'm looking to do.
Let's go way back to 2016, your junior year in college. You make that decision right after the NCAA championships to cut down to 86 kilograms. You, I think, were seated ninth at the Olympic trials, and then you make it all the way, Kyle Dake in the final, best two out of three, and you make the Olympic team. You have to go qualify the weight class. You get your passport, and then you get a bronze medal. From that point going forward, what was it about it that hooked you to keep doing this? Because I think at one point you weren't sure if you're going to go all in with international wrestling. What was the turning point for you to go all in like you have so far?
I mean, I don't think I never thought dwindled away from wrestling. You know, I it's something that I've been doing since I was a kid. I never turning away was something I never really wanted to do or had a thought to do. But I don't know. I don't know what the turning point was for me. It was just I really enjoyed my experience on the Olympic year that year, and I enjoyed getting to travel with the team and getting to know Kyle and Jordan and Daniel Dennis, Frank Molinaro, all those guys, Travell, getting to know them a lot better and getting to see, you know, what they really have to go through day in and day out. And I enjoyed it. And it was, I think if anything, that was probably it for me, you know, just getting to see that and seeing how awesome it was and how much of a bond there was and how cool it was just to be a part of that journey, not only on my own journey, but of others as well, and see what they go through and what they're doing. So I thought that was really an awesome experience. So, I mean, if anything, that was probably what compelled me even more so to want to do this even more. And it hasn't let me down, because every year you get new faces, you get new experiences, and you get to enjoy and reminisce and really fulfill, your dreams as well. So I think it's awesome.
After you got that bronze medal, Brian Smith, your coach at Missouri, said that you were very in demand around campus and that people wanted you for speaking engagements and that you really had to watch your bookings on how many opportunities you could take. How did you balance wanting to be gracious, wanting to give speeches, and then also knowing that, hey, you have to improve and you have a job to do?
Well, I mean, during the year, it wasn't too hard because I'm pretty focused on what I'm doing. But, you know, the coaches at the time did a great job of making sure that I wasn't overwhelmed. And I think I just had an open line of communication about how I was feeling and how I was doing. And then, we just kind of took it from there. So it wasn't anything that was too difficult. I enjoy doing things for others, and I enjoy being able to be a voice of encouragement and motivation to others as well. So, it's something I definitely want to do. But at the same time, like, you have to keep it in perspective. You can't let it get in the way of everything else as well. So we did a really good job of just communicating and make sure that we were still doing things right, doing what we needed to do. And if we could squeeze in things, then we did. And if we couldn't, then we understood, and they understood that, competition and stuff comes first, and that I need to make sure that I'm still able to compete and, doing what's best for my body and I'm making sure that, I'm doing the things necessary to stay on top. So, I just think that was the big factor, communicating and figuring that out.
What do you like about freestyle wrestling as compared to college wrestling? Of course, we have two different styles in the United States. And what do you like about what freestyle brings versus college?
I like the international competition. I like getting to meet people from around the world and getting to travel the world. I think that it's awesome that we, we get to go so many places and interact with so many different cultures and different backgrounds. And, you know, we get to embrace them. I think it really allows for us to have, an open mindset, an open heart to the world. It allows us to, not be tainted by what others say or may think. It allows us to have our own experiences with people from all around and to, have our own judgment on that. And I think that, that's awesome, especially in today's world with everything that goes on and that's being said out in the world about whoever and whatever. It's amazing just to be able to build and have your own experience, and have it firsthand.
Jaden, you were one of the most popular guys in Kazakhstan, and all the selfies that you took, did that surprise you, the outpouring that you got from the wrestling community over there?
A little bit. It surprised me quite a bit. I wasn't expecting that, but at least as much as it was, I wasn't expecting it. But at the same time, I'm grateful for it, and it was an awesome experience. It was awesome to get to I got to come in. I got to do the sport that I love. Got to travel the world, see a new place, see a new culture, embrace it, embrace new people. And gratefully, I got to, win a world title. But, the least I can do is, take a photo or spend time and talk with people, have people smile or enjoy time and everything. I think that's the best part about it is, each moment is something special. You try to make it special, for the other person as well. And, I really enjoy that. And it's something that's awesome. But yeah, it definitely was surprising how much that happened.
Last year, we asked you about this with your belt and how much you liked it. We had the unique opportunity of standing in the security line with you as your belt was coming through. They had to do a special check on it this year. They wanted to see what was in the bag. And I think you were keeping your eye on your belt the entire time.
Yeah. I don't know why. So I had my belt in my bag. It's the only thing in there. And then, I was getting processed or checked. And one of the TSA people, they were like trying to go in and trying to grab it and take it out and everything. And I don't know, but I was just trying to be as nice as possible, say like, please don't touch that. Like I was very, very much like, just don't touch it. Don't do anything to it. Just leave it there. And, I wasn't about them trying to like take it out or touch it or do anything like that. So I was like, just leave it there.
And I got to say, man, the Olympics would be cool to win, but winning a world championship and getting those belts, man, that's pretty a cool deal.
No, it's awesome. It's a great feeling. To have those people put that belt on you and to have it and to hold it and know that you've done it. Like it's an awesome feeling. And, it's remarkable, but, I definitely would like to stand on top of the Olympic podium as well.
What do you do with your collection that you have? You have a lot of hardware. Where do you keep it all?
Well, for the most part, it's either in the basement in a box, or it usually ends up somewhere that's just going to stick around. I'm working on trying to figure out getting like a case for everything so that it can be on display in the house. So I'm figuring that out as time goes on. But, at the same time, like, I get these things, they're awesome, and I embrace them in the moment, but you kind of got to let the moment fade after a while, because there's more to do, there's more to get done. But definitely should, I need to invest in a case, and that's what I'm looking to do, so that, it can at least be somewhere, and, if people come over, they want to see it, they can see it, and no problem. So it's somewhere where it's, I can show that I have as much pride, because I still have pride in it. So show I have as much pride in it as I did when I won it. So definitely need to do that.
Jaden, last year at this time, I asked you what you're going to do with your Living the Dream Medal Fund money. You said you're going to put a down payment on a home. And I think in conversations that we've had, you went ahead and did that. Do you have some something in mind with what you're going to do with this 50,000?
As of right now, no. You know, I don't. I'm not going to put a down payment on another home. that's not going to happen. So as of right now, no, I don't. I don't have an idea, but I'm sure I'll figure something out if there is something. But if not, then you know, I've always been about saving my money and doing the right thing financially. So that's probably what's going to go towards, is saving it or a retirement fund, maybe. I don't know.
Do you see yourself in Colorado Springs long term?
I'm not sure. You know, I just know it's the best place for me now. It's a place that I enjoy training, that I have everything I need for where I am in my career. So I'm not sure on that. So I don't know. And, you know, things might change. I'm not sure. My life might change. So we'll see in the future. But as of right now, it's a place that's good for me to be right now. Long term, I guess it depends on how my life turns out.
Kevin Jackson's the developmental coach. He's the guy that works with you day to day at the Olympic Training Center. Have you guys had conversations about the tournament, unpacking what just happened, and digesting what you're going to do going forward?
Not yet, but we will. We're going to have meetings on everything. Either this later this week, or actually, I think we talked about it. It'll be next week. So I'm taking these 2 weeks off. I'm going to go back home to Columbia, Missouri, next weekend, and you know, and see, you know, old faces and family and friends, and enjoy my time out there for a little bit. But we'll have those meetings next week. I'm going to try and have my evaluation either within these 2 weeks and try and knock it all out now, or have it in the beginning of next month. But I definitely want to start running it back. And, you know, I like doing that so that we can, you know, look to excel. You know, we're going to enjoy it for now. We're going to enjoy the time and love what happened. And, but I'm always looking to get better, and that's something that I look forward to getting started as soon as I can.
Jaden, when you think about the decision that's ahead, 86 or 97, what kind of factors are going to go into that?
I don't know. I think that there are a lot of factors to go into it. I think, like I said, the biggest one for me is the legacy thing. I think also the matches that I want, you know, what I want to do, who I want to face, will go into it. I think that, you know, what will benefit me, and what will help me excel as a wrestler to become the best that I can possibly be. So those are all factors into my decision. And, you know, it's not an easy one, because, you know, the guys on either side are great, great talents. I mean, and the guy, you know, and the weight classes are just are filled with depth. So I'm excited for the decision. You know, it's not a decision that I dread. You know, I think sometimes, you know, when you have multiple doors to walk through, you know, it's never a bad thing. So I'm excited for the decision, the competition, whichever it will be. And I'm excited for the trials that lay ahead, you know, because I think as my career, you know, continues, and as I start to get better in my own wrestling, I want to face tougher competition. I want to face the best of the best, and I want to be able to test my abilities on and on again. It's not just about getting better, but I want to see the fruits of your labor. You know, you want to see that. I want to see how good I really am. And so I think those things will come in the factor of my decision. You know, I think we just have two guys that are on two great paths. And I don't mean to say that, because I know Taylor's technically, you know, he's not sitting out. He had an injury. But, you know, he's sitting out because he was injured, and so he's still on list, and still great. He was a guy that was always good, and then if he could break the lineup, you know he would have performed internationally. And Kyle's been doing it, you know, since 2015, and has been crushing it. And so, I mean, it's a great decision to have, because they're two great guys that are going to push and test my abilities, and so I look forward to it. Cause it's not every day that you get to do that, you know, and I get to do that, depending on the choice that I make. So I'm excited.
Whether you go down to 86 or up to 97, you've got nutritionists out there at the Olympic Training Center. You've got strength and conditioning people that can help you. How much of a benefit has that been thus far? How much of a benefit do you think it'll be in 2020 with whichever route you choose?
I think it's going to be a great benefit. I mean, I've gotten to, I think, you know, the benefits I've been showing for the last 2 years, you know, and I think that, I don't expect it to change. I expect us to just continue to get better. As I'm getting better, so is the program. You know, we're not staying stagnant in any aspect of what we're doing, whether it comes to nutrition, the weight room, on the mat, you know. So when I talk about getting better, it's an all around system, you know. So, and that's awesome to have that other people in their respective fields that are helping me to get where I want to go are also on the on the path of, hey, we want to get better. We want to do things even better this time around. So, I mean, when you have that, you know, the whole way is up. And so, it's awesome. And I think it's great because we have an open line of communication. We're talking about things, we're figuring things out. And we're excited to work with one another. So, I definitely look forward to it.
Because you are a returning world medalist in a non-Olympic weight class, you get to get a bye to the semifinals. Do you like this system?
I don't know, like, if I necessarily like it, you know, honestly, it's not even like a like or dislike thing to me. I honestly don't care what the system is. Like, I don't care if it's a sit out. I don't care what it is or not. You know, I've sat out before. I didn't really like it anyway. I didn't like having to sit around all day, you know, and if it were up to me, you know, I'd throw us all our hats, you know, in a box and let's draw it out and let's all fight for it. You know, I've had to do it for 2 years, 2 years in my 4 years, being on the team, you know, and it's just, I did it in 2016 and I did it again in 2018. And so like, I have no problem, wrestling whoever it is I got to wrestle. So like, it's not a like or dislike for me. I'm going to show up and do what I have to do. You know, I get south to the semis. It's great, but, you know, I'm looking to wrestle and showcase my abilities and any way that I'm supposed to. But it, like I said, if it were up to me, we'd all wrestle.
How many competitions do you hope to get at your new weight class before the Olympic trials? What's ideal?
I don't know. I have no idea. That's something we'll probably talk about in the meeting that we'll have next week.
Let's talk about your parents for a little bit here. I think they were at the World Championships, weren't they?
No, they weren't.
They weren't. Okay. Did you get a chance to interact with them? Have you talked to them since the Worlds have been over?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, actually, it's just today. You know, I talked, my mom congratulated me and was excited and everything. And I got to talk to my dad a little bit today. And, you know, he was saying the same thing and telling me he's been praying for me. So, I mean, it's nice to be able to, represent, you know, your friends, your family, the people in your life that support you, to represent them to the utmost, not only as far as making on top of the podium, but just in general with the stage that I'm on and with the people that pay attention to my life, but to do it in a positive light and to do things right. You know, I take pride in where I come from and the people that are involved in my life and who have made the sacrifices to help me get where I need to be, or have taken the time to help me get where I need to be. So I take a lot of pride in that. But no, they didn't make it to Worlds. The only person that made it to the Worlds was Amanda, my girlfriend, and you know, so she came out to Kazakhstan. So I mean, it was it was great and to have her there and have a support system there.
What has your mom added to your life? I hear about her. I've seen her sing national anthems, and she seems like a really remarkable lady. What has she added to your life that's unique?
That's a hard one, you know. It's just because, like, I don't know if necessarily, you know, unique is the right word. Just because, you know, like, I think that parenting, you know, it's how do I say this? I'm trying to say this without going on a tangent, but like parenting, being a parent is more than just a label, you know? You know, I think that there are some parents in the world that are parents by label, but not by action. And I think that's a big difference. But, you know, I think that's something that like, we all, like all parents need to aim to be as a parent by action. So, you know, being, you know, loving, caring, you know, they just did what was necessary for me to thrive, and they wanted me to thrive, you know, both my mother and my father, they did. They created, an environment for me to thrive in, and they encouraged me to go after my dreams and to set my goals and to accomplish and to not be afraid to go out and be yourself in the world. So I think that, you know, that's a big thing. And the only reason I say maybe that's not unique, because I feel like that's what any parent should do. You know what I mean? But I mean, that's what they did for me. And that's awesome.
Do you have any stories that you can share about something your mom may have done or your dad may have done that really was neat during a wrestling competition, or something that stands out as memorable that they did that sticks with you even today?
I don't know. I think not really, you know. I mean, like, I think maybe it's just, like I said, common things, just being able to, like, you know, taking me to practice every day, you know, that's something that seems simple, but like, it was a 15, 20 minute drive to get to practice, you know, taking me to practice every day. Like I said, being motivating, encouraging, allowing me to thrive, understanding, you know, I think one of the biggest things is that, you know, whenever I need to, understand that what I do and how I do it, I'm very, concentrated on what I do. So like, there might be times where I'm not very vocal. I don't talk to you. I'm zoned in. And like, they allowed me to do that. They allowed me to thrive in the way that was necessary. So I think that would probably be allowing me to thrive the way that I need to, become the best that I need to do, you know, become, you know, to do the things I need to do to become the person, the wrestler, the man that I want to become. So, I think that was probably the biggest thing, you know, and not trying to be so controlling of it. And, you know, they just allowed it to happen. And, I think that's something that a lot of parents, you know, could take note of, is that you don't have to harp over your kids all the time. If they want to be the best, or they want to do what they want to do, they'll do it. And, you know, you don't have to be in their ear chirping 24/7. You don't have to yell at them. You don't have to do this. You don't have to do that. You know, if they want it, they'll do it. And I think once they realize that this is something I want to do, and this is something that I have a passion for, I'm willing to do it, they allowed it to happen. But they allowed it to happen my way, not theirs, you know?
At the Olympic Training Center, you had some good comments about just your desire to have people treat each other better, and just the treatment of people in general. Could you elaborate on that and why that's really one of your passions and you're driven by that?
I mean, it's just, you know, I'm human. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I'm an average guy, and no matter what, accolade that I have on the mat or anything. And I see the world that we live in. I watch the news, I see things on social media, I see everything. And, you know, and I think that's just one thing that I want to happen. You know, we live in a world nowadays where, like, you know, everything could turn negative so quick, and everybody will harp on it, and it will change how people see each other, or change how they treat each other. You know, we're quick to let one situation, you know, turmoil and run over into another and another. And I think that, you know, I want to live in a world where that's not the case. You know, I want to live in a world where, you know, it's okay to talk to somebody you don't know, say hello, to get to know somebody, to have a conversation. It's okay to treat someone with respect first, even though you have no idea who this person is. And I think that's something that a majority of people hold true, but it's something that definitely could be a lot better. That's basically what I want. I want the world I want the world to be peaceful. I want the world to grow. And, I want people to, you know, have experiences with one another, and to With every different, whether it's race, religion, you know, what someone's like or not like, whatever it is, you know, like there's something to be learned from somebody else. There's so much that comes from learning from people that are different from you, or people that aren't, just anyone that isn't you. You know, there's so much to learn, different perspectives, different knowledge, different, you know, culture, beginning, lessons. There's just so much to learn and so much to grow from. So I just want to, you know, encourage people to treat people better and take advantage of those opportunities.
When you talk about being able to greet people and talk to people, regardless of if they know him or not, the first person that comes to mind is your training partner, Mike Machiavello, NCAA champion for North Carolina State. Discuss him a little bit. You had mentioned a couple of cool things, that he was washing your clothes and he was doing everything possible. To me, he seems like the embodiment of what you're talking about.
No, definitely. You know, Mike's a kind heart, you know, a kind heart, kind guy. And he was willing to, you know, like you even said, wash my clothes in a sink, you know, with his bare hands, you know, willing to do that for me. And I mean, he's a guy that definitely embodies that. He's someone I can talk to about anything and everything. He's all, you know, I think there was someone that asked me to describe Mach in one word, and which is hard to do because he's so many things. You know, I chose noble. I think, you know, he's very noble. He's a noble human being. He's very, you know, he's just, and then I went on tangent and I was like, he's kind hearted. He's a good listener. You know, he can have a conversation and he wants that, interact with so many people and learn from so many people. And he has a good head on his shoulders and a kind heart. So, I mean, it's awesome to have him as a partner and as a friend in my life. And he's an all around great individual. And yeah, he's definitely someone that embodies, you know, that's what I'm talking about, you know, and that creates friendships and a bond that are just remarkable.
So this feeds into the next question. We got this question from Jim Farrell, who wrote in and said, next time you interview Jaden, ask him if he will run for public office in the future, gold medal 2020, then president 2028. How about you and Mach on the ticket?
Mach will win. Mark will win.
I'm just saying, you guys run together.
Oh, run together?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, definitely, we'll tear it up for sure.
That'd be a great car.
I mean, no, definitely. I just think, you know, I don't know, and maybe me being young and naive, and maybe some people will think that of me, and that's okay. But the world is full. You know, the world's history, you know, is full of negativity and it's full of bad things. Don't get me wrong, it's full of great things too. So, you know, it goes hand in hand. You know, I think that we should always try to change that. We should always try to better ourselves. And, I think the moment we stop trying to do that, you know, then we'll ultimately fail. So I think that, you know, there has to be people, you know, there has to be the mocks in the world, you know, to be a light in today's world. So I think that's the way I think about it. And I believe that the world, you know, can overall shine. It can glow and, it can be a great light, you know, be a great light in the universe, you know? So I think that's the ultimate goal. You know, like I said, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, you know, wanting people to be better and to better ourselves, to handle situations better, to treat people better. What I don't see how anyone would take that and see that as wrong thing to do, or bad thinking. You know what I mean? So I think that you know, that's what I want for the world, and that's the way that I'm going to carry myself to better it.
Jaden, I think we probably think of you as a veteran now on the USA men's freestyle team. 4 medals, 4 years, 2 titles, but you're just 24, and there's a lot of wrestling ahead of you. But when competition days are done for you, what do you see? What do you want to do after competitive wrestling is done?
I think I'm going to run for office. I think that, I have this one idea where I want to be a creative writing teacher for a deaf school. That's been a goal of mine, or a creative writing teacher in general. You know, I believe writing is a great way to, showcase your emotions or to write things out or to think about things. You know, it's very powerful. It's a very powerful thing when you have to look within yourself, put some pen to paper and really write out your thoughts, your emotions, you know, everything like that. So I think that that's, you know, something that I would like to go towards, and I have a goal towards, because I want to teach kids to not only write, but to, you know, think for themselves and how to express that, or give them an avenue to express themselves, to the utmost. So that's something I definitely would like to do. Other than that, you know, I'm not really sure. You know, I know I've said before that coaching, maybe it's not something I really want to do, but you know, I'm not gonna count it out, because you know, my mind and heart might change. I don't know, but I think it's also, I'm competing right now, so it's hard for me to see myself coaching at this moment. So we'll see about that in the future. But I do know that I definitely want to do something to impact the generation after me, and I think that's one way I want to do it. You know, I think that's something that needs to happen. There needs to be people that are looking for the people to come after them. And that's something that I want to contribute to, a better world, than the one that a better world that will be left behind than the one that I lived in. So, that's what I'm looking to do.
Didn't you say you're a Dallas Cowboys fan?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Don't you think Emmitt Smith would have been a good wrestler?
No, no way.
Really?
No, he got tired too quick.
who would have been a good football player to transition over to wrestling that would have been good and never had the chance?
If I had to guess, I would have to. And like, would they be wrestling now, or would we put them in their respective era?
In their era, you know, prime.
Their era.
Yeah.
Let me think. I would think that maybe like a Michael Orr. Michael Orr might be pretty good at wrestling, I would think. Big, tall, athletic man like that coming at you on the mat. It's a scary, that'd be a scary sight.
Okay.
This is before your time, but I think like a Dallas Cowboy that I think of, Bill Bates, safety, that he was pretty tough.
No, I couldn't hear the name. What'd you say?
I said Bill Bates. Back in the day, this is way before your time, but he was pretty tough, pretty hard-nosed guy that I think might have been a good wrestler with his toughness.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think also, what's his name? Is it Marcus Allen? I think Marcus Allen would have been good.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he was a tough guy, you know, so I think he would have been all right, for sure.
Yeah. That'd be interesting. So are you following the football season pretty close right now?
Not really. Honestly, some of the games have been kind of boring to watch. But the Cowboys definitely have been tearing it up. I'm excited that the offense is finally complementing the defense. You know, finishing off drives with touchdowns instead of field goals. Dak Prescott is starting to impress me a little bit, which I'll admit that I had my doubts about him. Last year, I'm glad Zeke decided to sign back. And the Cowboys, they should have paid him earlier. I think that, you know, you should have paid the man that carried the team for the most part. I mean, if anything, his first 2 years from Dak, you know, competing with Zeke in the backfield, to then the next year not having Zeke, it kind of showed that Dak still needed to grow, and that Zeke was still kind of the horse carrying everybody on the offensive side of the ball. But no, they're looking stellar right now. I don't want to jinx them though, but they're looking really good. The defense is looking really tough. And now the offense is complimenting. We got Randall Cobb and Amari Cooper, you know, out there wide receiver doing their thing. And, I think Paul Pollard is, the other running back is actually really good as well. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to it, and they're shooting off at all cylinders right now. So I'm excited, and I hope the train keeps rolling on.
And you tried out for football at Missouri, right?
I didn't try out. No, I didn't. I ended up not training out.
Okay. You wish you would have?
Oh, no, because then I would have to pay for school, and I didn't want to do that.
Okay. What? Who?
You know.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, but you know, I think that, you know, football for me was just to have some fun and to enjoy a sport that I do enjoy. I do enjoy football. You know, there's something about getting to ram your body into somebody as hard as you can. That's just, I don't know. It's exhilarating. It's fun. I enjoy that. So I definitely like, I mean, so I, if you couldn't tell from that, like, I love playing defense. That's something I really enjoy. And so, like, yeah, I just like the physicality of it. And yeah, so that's kind of like why I wanted to play.
What was it like wrestling at Carver Hawkeye Arena, knowing you're coming in as the opposing team? Great facility. You've been there where it was the hometown crowd backing you up at the World Cup. But what was it like wrestling when you're in Missouri going against Iowa?
It was probably one of the scariest moments of my life. They're a tough crowd, you know. But you know, they're also awesome. It's also awesome because, you know, they're invested in what's happening. They know the sport inside and out. It's probably one of, you know, Iowa is probably one of the best fan base arenas that I've ever gotten to go to. You know, not just for everyone who showed up, but just the noise, the feeling. You know, I don't know. It's just I like it when the crowds interact like that, even if they're against you completely. So, but they're awesome fans, and they definitely show out in Iowa. They show why, you know, Iowa is wrestling country, and it's awesome. It was awesome to get to be a part of that. But I will say this: as soon as we won that duel, I was ready to get out of there because I didn't want anything to happen. I'm like, let's just go get the trophy. Let's get out of here. We're done. But you know, it was awesome, and they're awesome fans.
There probably weren't as many people there wanting to get selfies with you at that point, right?
There was a few. There was
really?
A few in there.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a few. You know, I have great, tremendous respect for the University of Iowa and the wrestlers that they've created and the history that they have. You know, I think like anyone that grows up, I mean, you have to know the history of Iowa, you know. I think that, you know, for me, that really encouraged me in wrestling. You know, I used to want to go to Iowa, when I was younger. That was a dream school of mine, you know, cause I heard so many stories about, you know, about their teams and about Dan Gable and the brands and the toughness and the grit and the fight, you know, and you watch the guys. And then when I was watching the guys, you know, I was watching the, you know, like I'd watch Metcalf and all the time, and just seeing them go out there and just not just beat guys, but demolish guys and put them in the ground. I remember I used to think Metcalf was like 180 pounds because he looked so big on computer screen. But, you know, and then when I saw him in person for the first time, I almost didn't believe it was him because he was so small. But like that, you know, getting to watch him and getting to watch those guys compete was something that you look forward to and that you learned as a kid. So I mean, it's awesome, and it grows your passion for wrestling for sure.
Jaden Cox, we look forward to watching you continue to compete. Looking forward to seeing where you'll be at the Olympic trials. And as always, we're just glad to have you on as our guest after the World Championships. Promise us if you win an Olympic gold medal, you'll be our first guest after the Olympics.
I promise you, if I win an Olympic gold medal, I'll definitely be your first guest.
All right. We appreciate it. Thanks for being on, and look forward to talking to you soon.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks, Jaden. Like the idea of the Cox and Mock ticket, that probably intrigues me as much as anything that came out of that interview. We've heard his nickname, Mock the Mayor. I think Cox for president. I think it could be a winning ticket. I don't know if 2028 is the right time for it, but
he could still be competing.
I hope he is. Let's hope he is competing and that Mock is still competing. But I think big picture, I just think there's some people that transcend the sport in a lot of different ways. And I think that Jaden Cox, Jordan Burroughs, Mike Machiavello, there's just some quality guys, just Kyle Snyder being among that group where you just listen to them and you listen to what they say and the depth of what they have to say. And I like your comment always about Kyle Snyder is, hey, when I grow up, I want to be like Kyle Snyder.
I want to be as mature as him.
Yeah. The guy's truly a remarkable guy. So we have a great quality of wrestling right now, but it's predicated on the great people that we have in the sport. So you heard Jaden Cox there. It was so fun to get inside his head. We didn't talk too much about X's and O's, about the world championships, but that's fine. I think what he had to say was really big picture, and really enjoy hearing what he has to say.
Yeah, the thing that I like about this team, just being around them, is what you learn from them, the life lessons you learn from them. And they're all younger than us, but yet you can't walk away from a conversation with Jordan Burroughs without feeling like you've learned something about life. And it's the way that he handles it. I know that, you know, he's crushed in not winning a sixth world title, but his perspective in the mix zone the other night was pretty enlightening.
They really have an ability to grasp everything in words, and so much of it is because they are featured more than they've ever been. And the idea of a lifetime interview, even back in the day, to think of, let's just take who Jaden Cox mentioned with Tom and Terry Brands. You just didn't hear interviews with them. Like when they won the world, you just didn't see interviews with them after the fact. I don't even know if there's anything that exists where you film them and it's out there on YouTube. And it's not just one, it's constant. It's before the tournament, it's during the tournament, it's after the tournament. And so, and each one is unique to what just happened. And I really like that part of it. That's the great part of social media. Jaden got into the cruelty of it, but there are some great parts where you get to share that and you get to learn and you get to listen. And I like that aspect of it, that we continue to get to hear from these guys. And they have a lot more to say. Final thoughts from you as we close out this post-championship podcast?
It's just good to be home. Great trip. A lot of fun. Exceeded my expectations. Kazakhstan was great.
Really was.
Just ready to get rested up and back to work.
Get rested up, get back to work. We have the 2020 Olympics coming up. For Andrew Hamilton, I am Kyle Klingman. You have been listening to On the Mat.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.